You're listening to The Robin and Boom Show, engaging the contemporary world with the great tradition. Find us on our YouTube channel, our Facebook page, or on our website at robinmarkphillips.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Now, here's today's co-host, Robin Phillips.
On Monday morning, the world received news that the historic cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris was burning. By the time the flames were finally suppressed, the historic spire and most of the roof were completely gone, with damage throughout the church's central nave. French authorities have said that just 15 or 30 minutes more of the fire and the whole cathedral would have been entirely destroyed.
Yes. Yeah, this is one of those stories, one of those events where people will be able to ask each other 20 years after it, where were you when that happened? At least for many people who care about European, Western, any kind of traditional architecture, especially in Europe, many places in America, just a tremendous event. And a lot of people have been asking questions about it. What does it mean? Where do we go from here? It's just a very rich subject. So to help us explore this, we have Dr. David Wang with us. Dr. David recently retired from the head of the architectural department at Washington State University, where he taught for 20 years. He's the author of books about architecture and numerous scholarly articles. And last year, Robin and I had a chance to visit Dr. Wang in his art studio outside Spokane, Washington, and to discuss his forthcoming book on architecture and sacraments. He's here today to help us explore this. So welcome, David.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on our show. And I'll open with a question for you, Dr. Wang. So this structure took almost two centuries to build, and the people who worked on it knew that they would not see it finished, and even that their grandchildren wouldn't live to see the completion of their work. And this is just a very different mentality to how we approach projects today. And moreover, the Gothic style of the church in this city that now is constructed along modernist lines, it seems like an anachronism. It seems like a relic of a bygone age when people thought and behaved very differently to how we do today. And yet the public reaction to this tragedy, including the deep grief that's being felt all over the world, suggests that there's something about this cathedral that's still very relevant today. Something that strikes a chord deep within men and women all over the world. Can you help us make sense of what's going on here?
Well, again, thanks for having me on your podcast. I think what you just said, you know, there are many questions embedded in there, but one of the things that I think we can establish as a baseline is that the fascinating thing about material culture is that we call it material because it tends to survive lengths of time. Buildings in particular, because they are physical objects, they tend to endure through the generations. And to our point of discussion this morning, the way buildings were built centuries ago, they were meant to survive centuries. And so when a material object like Notre Dame burns down and the world is in grief, I think it says a lot about history. I think it says a lot about the nature of people. I think it says a lot about how one culture confronts another culture. And so this doesn't answer all the questions embedded in your statement there, but I think it starts the conversation as to what Notre Dame and its, you know, and the fire speaks to, which is these many layers of time and history and meaning and culture, and how people are embedded in, we swim in the culture that not only we live in, but in the historical cultures in which that have contributed to our current culture. I mean, I can go on, or did you want to say something here?
Well, I do want us to expand on that, but just, yeah, I want us to expand on that, but just by way of some education for us, can you kind of explain what the cathedral meant in its original 12th century context?
Sure. Well, the Gothic cathedrals emerged. Well, the cathedral form itself, the or as we call the basilica, comes from the old Roman structures that housed functions of the king, and basilios meaning the ruler or the king. And when Christianity was officially recognized, as opposed to being a something that needed to be persecuted and eradicated, when Christianity was recognized by Constantine in the early 4th century, Christians were able to adopt some of these the basilica and make them churches. Well, so there, right there, you see a transference of royalty, as it were, a building meaning designated for a secular ruler or for a worldly ruler to a building that is designated for the God of the universe. And so there was, from the very beginning, there was a motivation to create these structures to last and to supersede and scale everything else that surrounded it. And for a long time during the early, well, what we would call the early Christian centuries after the collapse of Rome, the collapse of Rome, we're talking 4th, 5th, around that century, around that time, brought about a tremendous lack in technical knowledge, scholarly learning. They were kept, that learning was kept in the, in the monastic compounds and whatnot. Make a long story short, during Charlemagne in the 9th century, there was a recovery of Roman civilization, and they began to be able to borrow from that ancient technology. First, to build what we now in architecture history call the Romanesque churches, which were heavy stone affairs. But it was the result of learning and improvements in technology when all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, but structures began to appear where the stone seemed to disappear. And it was driven by a renaissance of ideas in the 11th and 12th centuries, where the sort of the infusion of God into the cosmos, which was always a Christian insight, that began to be to find legs, as it were, to be operationalized by advancements in technology, where we began to build these structures where the stones seemed to disappear, and there arose the Gothic cathedral. The first one was in Saint-Denis, which is now it's northern Paris, but in those days it was north of Paris. And a sujet of Saint-Denis converted a smaller abbey church into the Basilica of Saint-Denis. And that was the first Gothic cathedral, if you will. That was the sort of the prototype. And It's very famous for saying that you know, the through the light of the cathedral we can ascend to the true light of heaven. So make a long story short, the Gothic cathedral is unsurpassed in Western architecture as an example of human beings striving towards the heavens and bringing God down in incarnation. And so the purpose of these cathedrals was not really about daily life, how I could sort of live and go about my means today, but to endure eternally. These buildings were internal structures, and I think the outpouring of concern and grief over Notre Dame, the fire at Notre Dame, suggests that we still are we're human beings still embedded in this type of lineage of culture that we have come down to us.
That was a big part of the fear, the grief I felt when I heard about the news. Also my relief when I found out the next day that much of the damage had been contained, that many of the great treasures had survived. And in fact, the cathedral has mostly stood up and we can rebuild it. But the sense of the possibility of loss, that on the one hand, you know that buildings are not eternal, even the best ones. But still, there's this hope that the civilization you have grown up in or formed an attachment to will continue beyond your lifetime. And the sense that such a powerful symbol of so much that I value could be lost in my lifetime, it was almost shattering.
Yeah. So good points there. Let's just talk about rebuilding and what that means. So, and this is where I think we can get into some aspects of sacramental experience. I'm going to posit the claim that what was lost really cannot be rebuilt. And what I mean by that is we can always physically rebuild things. And given our current culture's technological capacities, we could rebuild Notre Dame, and we could, you know, that the structure of it is not, there's no doubt. In fact, in quotes, it's no problem. What we lose is the sort of the marks of the participation of countless thousands of people over 8-9 centuries that that is embodied in that older structure. And think about if you were to lose your home. Now you guys have been to my house and studio, we live, you know, our house is situated in a lot of tall pine trees, and the biggest concern here is fire. And I think about once in a while how if this house were to be burned by fire, hopefully we have it insured, or, you know, we can find resources to recreate or rebuild the house. But it would not be the same thing, quote unquote, because what's lost in it is not so much the physical structure, but it's the participation, the history of participation of our lives, and also the family who lived here before us, that is somehow marked, had marked the older structure, and that's something that's not replaceable, and that's really the grief of it. I mean, so the participational aspect that we human beings have with material objects, I think, is something that's undervalued in our current culture. Why? Because, well, not a lot of reasons. One is our technological capacity to sort of, quote, reproduce anything we want. but also B, it goes to deeper issues of what we take language to mean now, what we take signs to mean, what we take the communication to mean. None of our theories of communication and linguistics in current culture pay any respect to the historical legacy aspect of, you know, we think of words and we think of signs as purely instrumental tools to convey my sort of naked meaning to you, but and vice versa. And we can change the meanings of those things, the signs, anytime we want. What's lost in all of that is the historical endurance of how signs of communication take on enduring value of meaning, precisely because as we use them, we participate in it. So that's what's lost. Meaning is not something that's instrumentally communicated just from me to you, let's say via this electronically enabled conversation. I mean, the exchanges that we had before we turned on the button to record, you know, celebrates the fact that we've known each other. We've met, Jason, I've met you once or twice before, and now we're separated across the world. But the value of language, which is to say the value of science of communication, really is to celebrate an embodied historical narrative. Absent that, or if we come up with theories of communication that denudes that dimension of participation, all we have are the physical signs. And I think what you're looking at with the grief that's worldwide that's expressed at the loss of Notre Dame is precisely people are saying are telegraphing or are indicating, no matter what they explicitly say, they're saying they're human beings. They have lost something. And I think the knee-jerk response in our culture is to say, let's rebuild it. Well, I think the real grief of losing Notre Dame is not going to be relieved by a sort of, you know, a good construction company rebuilding this thing. It's what the real grief is, that what we've lost is we've lost. And we better get used to that, because we've lost 8-9 centuries of participation of countless souls that that lived in and around the church, and that cannot be replaced.
Yeah, that's a very good point, that loss of participation. And I've thought about that too in my travels through Europe. In America, we often think of Europe as where all the old places are, where buildings and old towns and cities have simply continued from almost time immemorial. What a lot of us Americans don't realize is that much of Europe, maybe most of it, was destroyed in World War II and was rebuilt. So we are looking at reconstructions. It might seem like we're walking down in medieval or Renaissance streets. Much of the time, these are reconstructions.
Well, so let's talk about that in light of our basic concerns about Notre Dame. If you think about American material culture compared to European, our reality, our urban realities, were all realized after the Industrial Revolution. And so meaning that our cities are designed after human cultures have become aware of the utility of the machine. With the machine, we could expand all of our capabilities, capabilities for distance, capabilities for sound, capabilities for utility. And so you go to a city like Houston, Texas, or Phoenix, Arizona, or particularly some of these Western cities, all you have is a Cartesian grid that's imposed upon nature. And it is a sacramentality of the machine, if you will. The reason why we Americans find Europe so attractive, whether we realize it or not, is that this is a this is a urban, this is a sort of a material fabric of life and culture that for centuries preceded what scientific technology and the Industrial Revolution can do. And so, yes, I mean, you know, they much of Europe was bombed to smithereens during World War II, but in their devotion to recreating a world that they knew previously, as opposed to completely coming up with you know, sort of Houston, Texas horrors for Berlin or for some of these cities that were restored, again, is a testimony to the fact that we humans are more than we would ever realize, or more than the postmodernists would ever want to confess. We are anchored to history, and we want our environments to reflect that, remind us of that. And we pay good money to fly over the pond to go see this kind of stuff, and to be part of Berlin for 2 weeks, okay, or be part of Paris. I mean, I was thinking just yesterday, the times I've been to Paris and how excited I was to sort of be in that historic city. I was thinking to myself, well, now that I know Notre Dame isn't there in the way that it should be, would that impact my decision to want to go? But anyway, so that, I mean, I, again, I'm going on and on, but you're right. The urban fabrics of Europe have come down to us centuries prior to the Industrial Revolution, and we value that. We look at that and we see a world that we no longer have because, you know, the machine just raises everything and lays down a Cartesian grid.
Yeah. So, Jason?
Yeah. So, I was going to, in the sense of continuity in Europe, there's the objective material continuity, David, that you've been talking about, such as with architecture. Another aspect which is very powerful in Europe is on the subjective side, that of the human beings. In Europe, the sense of belonging to a particular place, a country, a region, a city, is enormously strong because of the sense of connection with ancestors who've lived there those past centuries. So we're not just only, when the European is walking through Paris, it's not just, here are the buildings who've been through all these centuries. Here are the signs of my ancestors, or people who are very much like my ancestors through the centuries. And even though, say, from a lot of historians would say, well, the nation as we understand it is somewhat of a recent invention, or that the sense of nationality has certainly changed over time. Say, maybe at one time Picardy was not considered part of France or something like that. Nevertheless, these population groups, in whatever forms they had, have continued through the centuries, and also some of the forms they have had, such as Christianity, even when Christianity has been on the decline since the French Revolution, still some of these forms, these patterns, have continued. And I think a lot of anxiety in Europe is a sense of the loss of those kinds of roots. I think for a lot of Europeans, it's put in a very superficial aspect. My concern as historian of ideas is the loss of the intellectual cultures. So you mentioned about Abbot Suger and this theology of light, which was so much behind the building of the Gothic cathedral. That's what I'm mostly concerned about. But the loss of the building is, like you say, it's a sacramentality. It's the loss of the sensible material sacrament that can ground us in maintaining that kind of cultural genealogy.
Sure. Yeah. It might be helpful for the audience for us to define sacramentality, and we can go to any dictionary and encyclopedia to look for that. The definition that I use in the book that I'm writing, Architecture and Sacrament, is a small human being, or small human being in general, participating in the embrace of a large, vastly extended immaterial reality for the sake of benefit to the human being. And the sort of the little formula, I hate to use that word, but I mean the statement that I make in the book repeatedly is, the object in front of me rhymes with a material order within me, which also rhymes with the orderliness of the cosmos around me. So when those three things jibe, when those three things align, we receive benefit, and we receive benefit, a sense of belonging, a sense of centeredness, a sense of anchorage. And so, again, the material object in front of me rhyming with the moral order within me, rhyming with the orderliness of the cosmos around me. This was the sort of the explicit or implicit goal of European intellectual ideas, I would say, up until Ferdinand de Saussure, up until the end of the 19th century into the early 20th century. And in that respect, the 20th century ideas if you look at the long span of history, it's the 20th century ideas that are the anomalies. Because it's fashionable in postmodernism, post-structuralism, to reject any notion of a continuity of history, reject any notion of a dependability of ideas that transfer from generation to generation, and on that rejection, we are much the poorer for being able to comprehend why we relate to buildings the way we do, or why we relate to material objects the way we do. So I applaud the your comments, Jason, because the loss of ideas, the loss of a continuity of ideas of where we came from, is precisely the reason why our Western culture, and to the unfortunate extent our Western culture is dictating other cultures in the world, is precisely why our Western culture is in crisis, you know, because we've rejected our own intellectual history upon which our culture has been founded for 19 centuries.
Yes.
But again, when you have people grieving over Notre Dame, why? You know, why are you feeling so bad that this church structure, which you don't accommodate in any of your ideas, why do you feel so bad that I'm speaking rhetorically? Why do you feel so bad about this structure burning down? Can you explain it? Can you diagnose your own grief? Can you tell us why you are immediately sending money to rebuild this thing so that at least we can have a stage set of it? I mean, I'm talking Robert Venturi there in a little bit. We can get into that, but I think it diagnoses the sort of deeper human need to have attachments to place, have attachments to material environments. Why? Because it telegraphs where we came from. It's precisely what our ancestors participated in. And by having that structure with me, I'm not only with the physical building, I'm with my ancestors, I'm with my lineage, I'm with my everything that I hold dear that defines who I am, even if I espouse with my mouth that history no longer matters.
That relates to something my friend Wes Callahan recently posted on Facebook following the disaster. And we're almost out of time, so I'm just going to read you what Wes observed, and then we're going to have to close. But we will be here next week to continue the conversation. When the tragedy happens quickly, he wrote, we notice and are rightly shocked. When it happens slowly, those who even notice at all are mocked or ignored. We've all seen the pictures in the news by now of the bare, ruined corrals where late the sweet birds sang in the interior of Notre Dame. That charred, smoking mess we see is our civilization, as it has been for the last 200 years. We do not live in old Western culture, not even in the twilight of it. We live in the cold, charred ruins. We ought to grieve with real tears over the sudden demise of Our Lady of Paris. But we ought likewise to be grieving every bit as much over the long, slow, agonizing demise of the culture she watched over protectively and then sadly for so long. Notre Dame is one of the many symbols of a culture that is long gone, and in the surviving scraps of which we amuse ourselves daily. Before Notre Dame can be rebuilt, she needs to be mourned. And those can mourn her best who loved her best. And all these same things are true in far greater degree of old Western culture. That cathedral in the news today is Christendom. We are those figures peeking through the ash. That's all for today, but Jason and I will be here next week, and we will again be joined by Dr. Wang as we continue to process what the Cathedral of Notre Dame means for us, for our culture, and for our future.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast. The Robin and Boom Show is made possible through the generous support of listeners like you. To become a patron of the show, go to robinmarkphillips.com and select the Robin Boom Show from the drop-down menu. If you have questions you'd like to have addressed on a future episode, send us a message through our Facebook page. Once again, thanks for listening.